Meet Reed Lance Rosenthal, rancher, number one best-selling award-winning author, and unabashedly, unapologetically, on the right side of the outstanding issues of our generation. But don't try to fence him in. Sometimes his positions will surprise you, because Reed is definitely his own man, with his own opinions. You might love him, you might hate him, but you won't be able to stop listening. Step over to the right side with Reed.
Saturday, folks, it's Reed Lance Rosenthal on the right side, and a slightly hoarse voice from talking to thousands of folks in five, or is it six? I lost track, states over the last 6 weeks. It's been a great book tour. Wrapping up today is the last day of the Idaho Fair in Blackfoot, Idaho. Great bunch of people. I love Idahoans, and I love the folks in eastern Idaho. And we've had an unbelievable response. I'll tell you a little bit about that in a moment. We're going to be having our little history story, which I think you'll find quite interesting and ties right into this climate change insanity you are hearing from the Democratic Communists. We're going to talk a little bit about what's going on in the gun control front. It does not look pretty. And we're going to be talking a little bit about some international stuff, which, once again, the press is not paying any attention to, even though it is major. In fact, if any of this stuff blows up, it's more than major. It is, like, critical. So we got some things to talk about this morning, and I'm going to keep the show brief again. AM folks, the AM affiliates can go ahead and, well, they already have planned for it. They'll have some good programming to fill in the gap. And the rest of you on podcasts and the website and all the other places you listen to in the United States, the 50 states and around the world, can go about your business earlier on Saturday. Now, next week, with this last, well, it's not the last fair, second to last fair, but next week, back at the ranch, I will have time to put together some of the shows that I've been working on to continue with this globalism theme that we picked up on and began, by 3 weeks ago or so. I've done a bunch more research, even though we have not had it on the program. I think you'll find it quite interesting, the dark money behind globalism, and some other spidery tentacles, should we say, of the globalism theme, the globalism push by such people as Barack Obama, who's really just a face piece, folks, just a face piece. And I think the bottom line is this. Globalism is a force. Globalism is an ideal. And globalism is really being controlled by and pushed by 300 or so puppeteers on the planet Earth. The ultra, ultra, ultra wealthy. The 1% of the top 1/10 of 1%. And you'll understand why when we talk more about it. And in their millions of followers, their legions of communist, socialist, and globalist followers, they have found, as Stalin called his followers, useful idiots. All right, let's go ahead and start the show. First of all, we're going to have our little history story. And it's actually perfect, because I don't know how many of you listen to Bits and Pieces. I don't think anybody. I mean, if you are the most rabid climate control globalist, global warming, climate change fanatic on the planet, I don't think you could have listened to all 7 hours of the dribble, excruciating dribble on the CNN town hall, I guess you'd call it. I mean, I don't know what it was. Oh, my God. With these guys spouting off over all the things they want to do to control what you eat, what you do, how you sleep, when you sleep, when you eat, what you do for work, where you live. I mean, you name it. Climate control is like the golden key to complete and utter control and dominance over all humans. That's really what it is. And that, by the way, folks, is why it's being pushed. It has squat to do with climate. This is contrived nonsense, which is the perfect setup for our little historical story for today. So on August 5th, in 1883, sleepy little island in the Sunda Strait, west of Java, there was a sleepy little volcano, and it began to stir. It began to stir actually the day before. The reports are that natives in the area had to put some kind of covering on their feet. They usually went bare feet because the ground was so hot, they were getting blisters. This was a Monday morning, by the way, in 1883. And sometime between dawn and mid-morning, the volcano, which had been virtually inactive for 200 years, two centuries, began to strut its stuff, and did it ever. There were four convulsive heaves that produced the greatest explosion in recorded history. That is more than any atomic bomb, more than anything. Anyway, the place was called Krakatoa. Now, I'm sure you've heard of it. It's in the dim recesses of your mind. But let me give you an idea of what this natural event did to the climate, did to the planet, and did to the area. The explosion was so large that it set off four earthquakes and 15 other volcanoes within 100-mile circumference. The explosion was so great that within 4 hours, I mean, listen to this, within 4 hours, windows would break 3,000 miles away. 10 days later, even those folks that had repaired those windows 3,000 miles away were getting the windows broken by rock fragments 3,000 miles away from this explosion. If you were within 500 miles of the explosion, there were 100 foot, think about that, that's 10 stories high, 100 foot tidal waves, which killed, by the way, almost 40,000 people. And even 6,000 miles away in Africa, they had tidal waves 10 feet tall. There was so much dust that the island of Krakatoa virtually disappeared. I mean, the island, by the way, is the size of Manhattan. So it's not huge, but it's not small. The temperature of the nearby ocean within miles of the eruption went up 50 degrees Fahrenheit. And the sky was so dark that for 3 days there was zero sun. It was nighttime. For 5 years, as far away as Hawaii, sunsets were green, not red. And for 25 years, from America to Europe, the climate was several degrees, which, by the way, is dramatic. I mean, several degrees is a big deal. The climate was several degrees colder. Now, juxtapose this with the expenditure of about $20 trillion, give or take, the complete disruption of the economy, complete control over every aspect of your life, and I am not beating the drums here. I mean complete control over every aspect of your life. The abolition of the combustion engine, the ending of coal and natural gas. Now, I want you to think about how much natural gas, what natural gas does in our society. There's almost nothing it doesn't power. There are millions and millions and millions and millions and millions of buildings that it heats, rather cleanly, I might add. It is a mainstay of the American economy and American labor force. It powers everything from power plants to industry and manufacturing. But that's going to be totally eliminated, folks, by 2028, according to some of the Democratic candidates. 2028. That's 9 years from now. Okay, you bet. And I can go on. They will tell you what to drive, when you can drive, what you can eat. Oh, yeah, I forgot. They're going to abolish meat, or they're going to tax it so it's so high you can't afford to buy it. This is to lower the temperature. I want you to listen to this now. 0.1 degree Celsius over a 20-year period. 0.1 degree. In the meantime, of course, China and India, who together produce approximately 80 to 90% of all atmospheric pollutants in the world, continue to rock and roll with their burgeoning economies and military. Only the United States is going to do this along with the morons in Europe. Oh, well, that should have a great effect. Terrific. All right. Maybe we can ban volcanoes. How about that? We can regulate volcanoes. We can have, how about this, voluntary buybacks, mandatory confiscations of all volcanoes, like they want to do in the gun control. some of the whackball stuff that's coming out on gun control right now because of the I believe, four mass shootings over the last several weeks is the stuff of whackballs. Mayor de Blasio, I mean, what a moron. Mayor de Blasio says that there'll be a mandatory buyback, kind of like they tried to do in Australia that didn't quite work, kind of like that which has totally failed in New Zealand. I mean, people are just saying, no, you want our guns, you come get them. Good luck. A mandatory buyback of guns. Bill and Mayor de Blasio, by the way, says, he looks right in the camera and he goes, oh, well, I think the majority of people will be smart and they'll go along with it. Gee, Bill, you know, you're kind of out of touch. You're not even in touch with the city you run, which is becoming a cesspool and a crime vortex after being cleaned up by Rudy Giuliani. No, nobody's going to comply with your nonsense. The folks that comply will be a tiny majority of gun owners in the United States. What these folks are shooting for and what they're aiming for, and that's no pun, unknowingly, because they're so out of touch with the people, they're so far removed from the Constitution, they are so far detached from American values and ideals, and they are oblivious, purposely oblivious, to the real reason for the Second Amendment, which is protection against the government, i.e. protection against them. They have no idea of the hornet's nest that they will stir up. And no, it won't be 99.9% of the people, Bill, going along willingly because they're smart. It's going to be just the opposite. So that's what's happening on the gun control front. Mandatory buybacks, confiscation, universal background checks. I've talked about this on the show before. Don't be lulled into this word game that the left plays with everything. And they play with everything. Remember what your erstwhile host always says. Words create thought. Thought creates perception. Or actually, words create perception. Perception creates thought. Thought creates opinion. And opinion drives actions. The left does nothing but play games with words. Number one, there is no such thing as an assault weapon. This is nonsense. These are semi-automatic rifles. An assault weapon is a fully automatic weapon, and it's used on the battlefield. Assault weapons, i.e. fully automatic weapons, have been banned in this country since approximately the 1940s. I believe it was 1946. You listeners can correct me if I happen to be wrong. A semi-automatic rifle is a semi-automatic rifle. It's no different than a semi-automatic shotgun. It's no different than a semi-automatic pistol. Obviously, folks, this is not where they want to go. Where these people want to go is to disarm the population. And their strings are being pulled by the puppeteers who are globalists and the United Nations, all of which, by the way, are one and the same if you listen to my shows several weeks ago. I mean, this is a cabal. A cabal of control freaks out for their own personal power and gain, and I might add perpetual power. Because, you know, perpetual power comes from your subjects or your slaves or the multitudes that you supposedly lead having no way whatsoever to remove you from power. That is true perpetual power. And, of course, in the end, the only way to remove a tyrannical government, as the Constitution clearly says, is through the use of arms. That is the whole reason for the Second Amendment. Everything else is secondary. We're going to watch this gun control thing really closely for you. Sometime in the next month, I want to see how things kind of sift out. The White House is working on some proposals, which actually makes some sense. The NRA has a couple of proposals of theirs, which makes some sense. You have the Democratic whackball proposals, which make no sense. And I think there's a bunch of ideas out there which could be employed that make a lot of sense. Because it's not guns, as we all know, it's not guns that kill people. It's people that kill people using guns, or using cars, or using bombs, or using knives, or using their bare hands. I gave you statistics, I think, 4 months ago. There were more people killed by hammers and similar type of blunt trauma instruments last year and the years before. This wasn't an anomaly in the United States than by firearms. Think about that. You're going to outlaw clubs? You're going to outlaw canes? You're going to outlaw hammers? I mean, you know, please give me a break. Over in England, where, of course, they've had so-called gun control for, I believe, about two decades, the number of attacks and murders with knives has gone up somewhere, I think it was 18-fold or 28-fold. I mean, it is an astronomical number. And once again, if I'm a little bit off on the number, the point is that somebody who wants to kill somebody else is going to figure out a way to do it. If it's not with a weapon, a single-shot weapon, a non-semi-automatic, a semi-automatic, a whatever, they're going to get the job done. It's unfortunate, but it's true. Which brings you back to the real crux of the problem. And the real crux of the problem is people's psyche. Ironically, the psyche of many people are disturbed now exactly because of the nonsense you are hearing on the boob tube from the fake media and from the alt-left time and time and time again. Everything is a crisis. Everything is a problem. We're all going to die in 12 years. I mean, do you really think that people who are susceptible to that type of messaging are going to be stable in their everyday lives? It is the messaging of the left and the messaging of fake media, which in fact creates at least a good portion, perhaps not all, of the mental instability, which in the end leads to mass shooters. Now, obviously, there are mass shooting folks who have their own individual mental problems. Then you have the drugs out there. Virtually all of these people are on some type of drugs. I've talked about this. Go back and put in mass shooters, gun control. Any of those kind of search terms in the search bar on the website, and you can listen to those shows. I have another theory, too, which goes back to mind control. Type mind control in the search bar of the shows. Listen to those shows. It's fascinating. And it goes back to the Montauk Project. And I've talked about all this. There is absolute irrefutable evidence that the CIA, perhaps in conjunction with the Russians, read the articles on those show sites, listen to those shows. This is not tinfoil hat stuff. Has developed a mind control using radio waves. And that they have successfully implemented it in many, many tests. In my personal opinion, there are no coincidences. I don't think that we had four mass shootings within 2 weeks with this sudden huge flurry of gun control hyperbole and jumping up and down and nonsense. I don't think that that's an accident. I don't think there are any coincidences. And I don't think that the shooters, who all kind of had the exact same M.O., and by the way, that MO, very similar to the mass shooters of the past, whether it's Columbine or whether it's Las Vegas or whether it's any of the mass shooters who are non-terrorist, such as the San Bernardino shooters. The San Bernardino shooters several years ago were Muslim terrorists. That's a whole different breed of cat. But the bottom line is that I believe mind control has something to do with these mass shooters. I believe that their minds are made susceptible by the atmosphere and the ambiance of current turmoil and upset, both domestically and internationally, and the messaging of fake media and the left. And I firmly believe that none of this is an accident. Zero. Nada. And the fact that you have four mass shootings, the fact that the MO of these people are all the same, and the same as most of the mass shooters that preceded them over the years, and that you have this sudden upwelling of folks who want to take away your guns, take away your rights to self-defense, take away your Second Amendment, and most importantly, take away your ability to change a government that becomes tyrannical. None of this is a coincidence. I don't believe in coincidences out there. We're going to talk way more about this in upcoming shows. And I'm putting together some more information on some advanced mind control stuff that I've actually run across. My former shows, I got a lot of great response on that. I mean, it really trips people's trigger. You know, you can get your hands around the reality of it, the unfortunate reality of it. But There's more going on in the mind control field with both the military and the intelligence agencies, not just of the United States, but of other countries. Remember that globalists, the 300 folks, the puppeteers who run the show, they're not just Americans. They're international. Those 300 puppeteers are spread around the planet, folks. And they all got the same goal, and they all have the same little club, and they all know each other, and they have the money and the power and the anonymity, because they live in the shadows, to get things done that even the wildest conspiracy theorist would not come up with if pressed. The next thing I want to talk about is Mr. Comey. Dirty Cop Comey and his dirty cop henchmen and cabals. And that includes Mueller, who's pathetic. I mean, if you watched his so-called testimony to Congress, didn't even know who Fusion GPS was. I mean, oh my God. And he was supposed to, he had nothing to do with this. He was the figurehead for that that fiasco. What's happening with Comey, folks, is that unfortunately, the IG's report, Horowitz, which came out, basically said, you know, he's a dirty cop, but he shouldn't really be prosecuted. And this brings to bear something I told you months ago. And that is, like Mueller, who everybody said was the greatest guy and a Marine hero and above reproach, and you can trust him for everything. He's just Mr., you know, he's Mr. Polished America, just doing things for all of us with only the country's best interest at the bottom of his huge heart, his huge patriot heart. Well, you know, Mueller's a scumbag. And he is pathetic, and he should be in jail for his roles in Uranium One and other ridiculous scandals, which were not only not in the national interest, but undermined national security. And he should be in jail for how he conducted his so-called investigation, which he didn't conduct at all. This guy was like, either he's senile, or he's incompetent, or he didn't even know what was in his own report, if you watch that testimony. It was pathetic. I mean, my grandson could do a better job on the stand than he did. Mueller and Comey and McCabe and that whole cabal at the FBI, Brennan at the CIA, Kerry at State, these people need to be prosecuted. I'm beginning to get nervous that they're not going to be, because everybody seems to be relying on Horowitz's report. Horowitz's report, which I'll remind you, was supposed to be out in March, and then April, and then May, and then June, and then July, and then August. And here we are in September, and there's no report yet. I mean, how long does it take to investigate this crud? He's been working on it for 2 friggin' years. This is outrageous. And I don't trust him worth a hoot. He was appointed by Obama. I don't trust anybody Obama appointed. Obama had his own agenda. And his agenda was alt-left, it was Islamist, it was anti-American, and it was pro-globalist, period. That's what his agenda was. That was his agenda from day one, and unfortunately he got elected. That was his agenda in day 1200, whatever it was, when he unbelievably got reelected because moron Romney couldn't run a campaign. And Horowitz is one of those guys who, like Mueller, everybody says is above reproach, absolutely honest, has nothing but the country. I mean, if you listen to them talk about Horowitz, it's the exact same things they said about Mueller. We know how that turned out. And I have long maintained that I don't trust Horowitz, that I don't believe he's going to give a fair report, that I don't believe he's going to push for indictments. And the first clue that I may be right, and I really hope I'm wrong. I really hope I'm wrong on this one. I'd love to be wrong on this one. The first clue is here comes this report on Comey. And basically the report acknowledges that he broke about every rule in the book, broke a bunch of laws, etc., but that he shouldn't be prosecuted. I mean, this is kind of like, this is like Hillary Clinton committing 18 known felonies, blatant, black and white, provable, out in the open felonies, but she shouldn't be prosecuted. Or as Comey would say, ironically, no reasonable prosecutor would take the case. Remember his, July 16th, 2016 press conference? I mean, how could you forget it? Comey now, despicable person that he is, despicable American that he is now jumping up and down, seeing I'm not going to be prosecuted, and that vindicates me, and then, unbelievably, you guys can Bing this up. Don't Google it. Bing this up. He's now asking for an apology. He wants an apology for all the bad things that was said about him, that poor, crooked, dirty cop. Well, Mr. Comey isn't out of hot water yet, because at least Barr and his bulldog second-in-command on this investigation are doing their own report, and that happens to include the FISA warrants. So Mr. Comey may be asking for an apology a bit early. I think, if not, then I guess Comey is going to skate. And if Comey skates, folks, I begin to lose hope that the numerous people who need to be indicted, brought to justice, and thrown in jail for the anti-American treasonous shenanigans of the past 3 or 4 years, my hope begins to go down. And I really hope I'm wrong on this. I really, really hope I'm wrong. I guess if we can't trust Horowitz, we're going to have to trust the Justice Department and Barr's investigatory team. I'm going to keep my eye on that for you. Judicial Watch, by the way, won a court victory just yesterday, Friday. And a judge has ordered a bunch of documents in the Hillary Clinton email case, obstruction of justice, breach of the Espionage Act, you name it, produced by the State Department and the Justice Department. What concerns me about that ruling, though, is that I just said the words Justice Department. Now, under William Barr, why would the Justice Department be stonewalling documents on the Hillary Clinton investigation by Judicial Watch? I don't know. I'm going to have to scratch my head and get my hands around that. But you can see the correlation. You can see my concern, perhaps. I mean, sometimes things are not as they appear. But things are never a coincidence. Then the last thing we're going to talk about this morning. Excuse me. We're talking about China, Iran, and Brexit. Things are very tense with China right now, folks. And I don't mean the trade war. That's tense enough. And I don't mean the economic jarring, jousting, and competition between the United States and China. That is tense enough. There is a military friction that has developed, and I've talked about it in the past, a military friction that has developed in a number of areas and on a number of fronts between the United States and China, in the South China Sea, in Africa, in Venezuela. There's a number of flashpoints that we are at with the Chinese. And with the, I don't want to say rancor, it's not that strong, but with the animosity, with the anger, with the upset that is being created by the trade war, which, by the way, I fully support, that is being created by the trade war and the battle over intellectual property theft and other things that are going on with the Chinese, that has created kind of a floor, if you will, a foundation for the boiling, or at least simmering, of military confrontation in one or more of these areas, particularly, I might add, the South China Sea. You want to keep your eyes firmly on that. If I were you, I would Bing, not Google, Bing, up China military maybe once a week, and you will get at least some international reports of what's going on. You know, the mainstream media in the United States are too busy making up things about Trump tweeting about the hurricanes. That's their big deal. Or beating the drums of climate control. I don't know how many of you saw Wolf Blitzer, just as an aside, on CNN, who launched into this tirade. I mean, the guy doesn't know anything. I can barely listen to him, never mind look at him. Launched into this lecturing tirade about climate control, and he started spouting AOC, you know, the bug-eyed babe from the Bronx, started spouting all her nonsense. We're all going to die in 11 years, and, you know, New York and Miami are going to be under 3,000 feet of water, and blah, 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 blah. I mean, it's just pathetic. But that's what they're focused on. They're not focused on the stuff that means anything. And the potential conflict between the United States and China on a true military basis means a lot. And it's probably not probable, because I think both countries have lots to lose. But I think it's highly possible. And the friction is increasing. It's not decreasing. So keep your eyes on that, because that would have, boy, I mean, that would have a huge impact on your life and everything to do with it, your job, your security, your finances, you name it. The second thing you want to keep your eyes on, once again, you know, other than the press trying to blast Trump and morons talking about, as I told you last week, as morons talking about how we should still be in the Iranian deal because at least that bought us 10 years of no nuclear weapons. I mean, that's kind of the Chamberlain theory. We'll give Hitler Czechoslovakia and then he'll go away. The Iranian deal is ugly. And I think, and I've maintained this for years, you folks who listen to me, you can go back you can type in Iran into the search bar. There's going to come a day of conflict with Iran. It may be Iran versus the United States directly. More likely, it'll be Iran versus Israel and perhaps Saudi Arabia and some of Israel's newfound Arab allies who are petrified of Iran, backed by the United States. But the day of confrontation is coming, and that situation is rapidly heating up, and it's really not being reported by anybody, and that too could have an extremely disruptive effect on your life, the economy, you name it. And once again, it's also something like the Chinese situation that must be confronted. The only thing worse than a conflict with Iran, which would have immediate detrimental effects, is Iran getting the bomb. Because talking about detrimental effects, that would result in some detrimental effects. You don't want to have a bomb in the hands of madmen who believe that using it will bring the 12th Imam. The results will not be something that you like. And Afghanistan. So, you know, I am concerned. I am not in favor of keeping a bunch of troops in Afghanistan. I'm not in favor of continuing to wage, in a half-butted way, a half-assed way, what is now almost a 20-year conflict using American blood and treasure. I have no faith whatsoever in the Afghan military or the corrupt Afghan government, which the United States, not under Trump, but under Obama and Bush, set up. I have no faith whatsoever in the ability of the Afghan army to fend off the Taliban. I have no faith whatsoever in the general population of Afghanistan, particularly in the rural areas, maintaining any semblance of democracy, education, you name it, in the face of Taliban bullying, threats, and murders and assassinations. And I do fear that we might make the same mistake in Afghanistan that Obama, well, it wasn't a mistake, he did it intentionally, but we'll get the same result in Afghanistan that Obama sought and got in Iraq, which is to create a vacuum into which a new terrorist powerhouse, like ISIS before it, could kind of flow in, fill, and grow from, you know, kind of like a botulism on a petri platter. So that's another thing to watch. And then the last thing on the international front is Brexit. The new prime minister over there is a tough nut. He's kind of the Trump of England. And Boris, baby, is not taking any guff. He's pushing Brexit through. Keep your eye on Brexit, folks. Not only is it like the key to the future for England, one of our closest allies, if not our closest ally other than Israel, But it, in that respect, the success of England will also overall help the economy of Europe, not of the EU, but of Europe. And that helps the economy of the United States. It will also give the United States a more robust trading partner with far less regulations and a military partner, if ever needed, that has far more latitude than operating under the EU umbrella. So there's a lot of things going on with Brexit, but the real key thing on Brexit is that Brexit right now is the battleground between the forces of globalism. Think big picture now, stratospheric. It is the battleground between the forces of globalism and the forces of national sovereignty. And the globalism forces are pouring everything they can into the fray to try and stop, undermine, and abolish, eliminate the Brexit movement in England. So it's going to be very interesting to see how that plays out. If Brexit does not go through, it has detrimental effects both to the EU, in my opinion, and to America. And it also is not a good sign for the success or failure of the globalist movement. If Brexit does go through, then just the opposite. Then globalism is once again, as the original Brexit vote, and as Trump's election put it, in retreat across the globe. It's I wouldn't call it the Waterloo of globalism, but I would call it a very important battle in the war to stop globalism. The next big battle will, of course, be 2020, the elections in the United States. But that is yet another tale to be told. This is Reed Lance Rosenthal on the right side. Oh, yeah, I'm ending early. First of all, I want to thank all the great people of Idaho and Nebraska for your hospitality. You are absolutely terrific. I want to welcome all our many thousands of new readers and our many thousands of readers that came in and got additional books because they like the books they've read. I want to let you know, folks, that Nebraska sold out of book 4, Moccasin Track, in about 5 days. And Southeast Idaho will sell out today of book 4. And we're talking a lot of copies. Not as many as I would like to have had on hand, but a lot of copies. And we're getting rave reviews on book 4 and the front matter setup of book 4, which kind of, you know, this is a big series with many characters, and your author was a few years late on book 4, which I'm about to make up for. And the front matter with the introduction to the saga, the introduction to the book, the maps, which are new in all the books now. They're just terrific. By Carolyn Nelson, in fact, out of Casper, Wyoming. What a great artist. The synopsis of books 1, 2, and 3 in the form of cliff notes, which bring you completely up to speed from page 1 of book 1 to the last page of book 3. And the alphabetical listing of characters with their backstories by book, right up in front of book 4, brings you right into the story of book 4 without having to go back and crack the covers of the previous 3 books. We've gotten rave reviews on that. Rave reviews. We've already probably had 30 or 40 people in Idaho who bought book 4 toward the beginning of that event, like last Saturday, Sunday, Monday, who've already read the entire book. Rave reviews on the book and rave reviews on that front matter setup. So I want to thank you all for that. And I'll bring you up to speed very quickly. The Barnes & Nobles and Amazon do not have the books yet. I mean, they're sold out everywhere. They should be showing them in their warehouses toward the end of this coming week. If you have not subscribed to the website, which is your only source of accurate information, do so. ThreadsWestSeries.com, www.threadswestseries.com. They will let you know when to call your Barnes & Noble or whatever. Until then, don't. You annoy the store and you're wasting your time. They can't take an order until it's showing in their warehouse, and it is not showing in their warehouse yet. It's all in shipping. So the places where the books are available are pretty much through the publisher. You can buy them through the publisher right now. www.threadswestseries, same site. I believe book 4 is priced at $15 plus shipping. And the other books are priced at either $12 or $14. Kindle went live last Saturday. It was Book 4 was actually top 100 Kindle Saturday morning, I believe it was. So thank you all you Kindle readers. iStore went live, I believe, day before yesterday, Thursday, for Book 4. Poor Barnes & Noble can't seem to get their Nook going. I don't know what the problem is. They got the uploads the exact same day as Amazon did for Kindle and iStore did for iTunes. But Nook is not up yet. Stay tuned to the website. Once again, threadswestseries.com. There'll be an email blast going out when Nook is up, and there'll be an email blast going up when you can buy the books on Amazon or order the books and buy the books at the Barnes & Noble stores, which is not yet. Which is not yet. And the stores have no control over this, folks. They can't make it happen. It's out of their control. If you are subscribed to the site, you've gotten my email, so you know kind of how the system works. It's rather archaic, but it's how the system works. So thank you all for the great support for Book 4. Thank you all for reading Threads West. Those of you who haven't, you know, I urge you to crack the covers of Book 1 and get started. You Threads West readers rock. I love you. In all the locations we've been, by the way. Our next gig will be in Tulsa, Oklahoma at the Oklahoma State Fair, which I believe is September 26th through October 6th. So we hope to see our great readers in Oklahoma and northern Texas there. And we'll get you all set with Book 4. I think we'll have enough for that event. I don't know, but we'll be pretty close one way or the other, I hope. This is Reed Lance Rosenthal on the Right Side Radio. Thanks to all you readers. Thanks to all you listeners. And now I am off to the fair.
Please remember, if you've missed any shows, just click on Show Archive and you'll find all of his shows. We look forward to seeing you here again next week for another episode of Reed Lance Rosenthal on the Right Side.